But hello, everyone. Good afternoon, and welcome to the best panel of the day. Okay. I was going to say you can save the applause to later, but thanks for getting a head start on that. Much appreciate it. Also, a big shout out to my 5Kers from this morning. I see you out there, Safa. Nice job. Loved it. Steven, next year. I see you all out there. Nice work. Champions and winners. Come on up, Fabian. Champions and winners. Get up early in the morning for 5Ks. That's my viewpoint on life.
We should have that picture of the 5K. I was at the beginning of the 5K.
Perfect.
So we All right, here we go.
We Please have two winners
Denise
for the 5K
your
today.
Your attention.
One is the winner of the 5K, and that's my buddy Safa over here. He killed it. The other winner for is the best...
Wait, he beat you?
It was close.
Oh, okay.
It was a close one. The other winner goes to my friend Peter, wherever he is, on the best reason
why... Here's Peter.
The best reason why you couldn't run the 5K... And I asked you last night, you said you just didn't have legs. And that was it, and you weren't going to run. We'll leave it there. We're going to leave it there. But you're also a winner for the best reason why you couldn't. Okay. So welcome to our afternoon panel today. This is probably the eighth we've done in our Future Work series, focusing on workforce development. And my God, what a year it has been. John Havens, you're a returning guest to our panel. We did this last year. And what a year it has been for the term workforce development. What an absolute change. So I am missing my co-conspirator, Simon Vine, on everything related to Future of Work, so I'll try to do him proud today. Workforce development has also a very localized flavor here. Joe, did you want to say a couple of words, introduce some things? Go ahead. Yeah, I think there are a great few comments just to set up the conversation before we turn over to our panelists.
Hold on, let's get you a microphone.
Yep.
There you go. So currently in Ohio right now, there's legislation being drafted. This has not been introduced yet. I can't say too much about this bill sponsor due to confidentiality. But basically what we're looking to do in Ohio is change the way the Ohio Department of Education is structured. Through that, we've been telling kids college, 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 and pushing in that direction repetitively, especially from the state level. What they're looking to do now is divide the Department of Education into a division of primary and secondary education and a division of career technical education. So therefore, helping kids at a very young age start looking at STEM, the trades, everything that we're not doing right now. So that is something that we're going to see probably here introduced in the next 2 to 3 months, and I would expect it to be done before the end of the General Assembly. Enacted into law, and we will have a new Department of Education here in the state of Ohio that's going to be much more business friendly to the trades and those that we're looking to serve. So anybody that has an interest at all in terms of talent should be playing on this issue.
Thanks, Joe. So that's a really good example of systemic change happening at a state level, and that's kind of what we need to see in terms of innovation to move beyond theory and talk to the practicality of how we reimagine talent and talent acquisition. So it's but no longer a linear process of acquiring talents and skills. It's a much more imaginative and creative way that, from my perspective where I sit with the people we work with, it is much more a bottom-up effort than a top-down effort. So that's why we have a dynamite panel here today. We have people from nonprofit, from large corporates, from the global perspective, we have the trades, and we also have the student perspective to really get a well-rounded view of what do we mean when we are saying now workforce development on the impact of how people live, work, and play, and make their decisions. So I'd love for each of our panelists just to introduce who you are, where you sit in your regards to your occupation, and how you see workforce development, and then we'll take it from there. John, you want to go first and pass it down?
Sure. Still John Havens. Through the family office side of our work, we have investments in multiple industries, everything from quartz manufacturing for microchips to banking to insurance to PEOs to the trades. The other, like banking and insurance and PEO businesses, it's not nearly as hard to attract talent because it's very kind of corporate. You have the college pipeline. So that's not really the challenge. Our challenge has been particularly in our services businesses. And it has to do with first perception, you know, play a little word association. What's the first thing you think of when you think of plumber? You know, I guarantee you it's not a Ferrari. So that's the uphill battle that we constantly fight. And with more places going remote and we are relatively remote with our customer service and our accounting departments and all that, building culture and not losing your culture through that kind of diaspora, right? So a little long-winded, but I'll pass it on down.
I'm Cedric Riley. I'm the founder of the Pride and Empowerment Network. I'm also the creator of MotivateFosterKids.com. I see a huge opportunity for us to look at the foster care system and the needs of thousands of young people and young adults here in Columbus who are in need of access from an educational standpoint, from a workforce standpoint, as well as a technological standpoint to higher levels of society. I think that Columbus can become a benchmark for what other cities can do where it concerns foster care to impact over 400,000 youth in the foster care system today. So as Columbus looks to grow into a first-class city in America, I think that they will and should be judged by what they do with the thousands of young people in the foster care system who will then feed into your educational, your technological, your retail, your potential homeless sectors as well. Quick note, there's a 47% correlation between foster care and homelessness in America. And so any growing city should be evaluated based on how they treat the leaking hole in the bottom of their particular ship, which in my case, in my view, is the foster care system. So I look to be a partner there, and hopefully we have a good conversation today.
So did I just make a comment on foster care? Because that is part and parcel to this summit we're gonna have in Michigan. And New York State, since you're a New Yorker, went from 60,000 to 16. There's a, you know, and the other states are going in reverse. Yeah. So all we need to learn from each other.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Melissa Wolfstar. It may sound familiar here this morning. I work for Jewish Family Services, which is one of the larger nonprofits here in Central Ohio, serving all of the area's communities when we think about human services. I'm our chief program officer. I'm managing many of our workforce programs and all of our family stabilization work. So for me, workforce development really focuses on that adult career transition, whether it's someone who's unemployed, underemployed, or someone who comes from a C-suite position looking for that next transition and opportunity. I could talk all day about barriers to employment, what that really looks like in a localized level. I think the panel right before us really hit a lot of the tones and elements of opportunities that we have and how we get to those areas for us to really excel and take all of our workforce from at-risk youth to our underserved communities and what is keeping people out of employment. No one's mentioned the whole notion of our workforce that are leaving, those who didn't return from COVID, but also those who are leaving the workforce, and how we think about hybrid work environments, I think, is really relevant when building culture and bringing people back into employment. So I'm excited to speak here.
Hello, my name is Michael Spitt. I'm running a small M&A boutique in Germany, working for a couple of private equity and family offices. I'm also running, at the moment, an international company, and that's why I'm here on this panel, because we tried to establish Future of Work 3 years ago, before COVID kicked off. We made a different experience, especially when it come to the differences in cultures worldwide. And how do you establish a culture of your own company by having this diversity in one group of company? And this is, for us, it was really important to see that not everything which happened in the US will also apply for Europe and will never apply for Asia. This, you have to be very careful on that and see that there are differences, which has also to be respected when you do international business, to bring in the right culture. What I found out all of the times when we did some projects successfully, the culture of the company is the most exciting and most important success factor for being successful.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Fabian Patamadden. I manage our JP Morgan private bank business here in Central Ohio. I've been with JP Morgan Chase, formerly Bank One, for 23 years, most of that has been here in Central Ohio. JP Morgan is one of the largest non-governmental employers here in Central Ohio, and also in addition to my day job, I'm part of our, I co-chair what we call our market leadership team, and our market leadership team is just our senior leaders here at JP Morgan in Columbus and how we define ourselves, be a part of the community. Yogi talked a little bit about it earlier and how we, our investment with Ohio Excels. Kevin talked a little bit about earlier with Color Coded Labs, and JP Morgan Chase has provided dollars and grants to those organizations to help continue to grow our Central Ohio community, in addition to many others.
Awesome, thank you. So I have a couple of quick questions. This came to mind as everyone described kind of their background. John, I'll start with you. A few months ago, I had somebody come in to fix my washer and dryer. Two young guys came in, probably in their mid-20s, late-20s, plumbers. They came in to do a 15-minute job. They ended up staying for an hour because I was grilling them about the industry and their aspects and where they wanted to go with it. So thinking about what Joe described about kind of the systemic view, one of their things they said is it's simply hard to advance up the ranks of being a plumber due to licensing and having to wait 7 years to get the particular license. Therefore, the ladder, if we will, doesn't have a lot of rungs. Mm-hmm. So how much from your perspective is the acquisition of talent into the trades, which we all agree is a necessity, how much is it just the system itself is inhibiting itself, and is there a possibility to change that?
Well, I would kind of disagree with that. So it's very hard to get data on the plumbing and HVAC industry because it's mostly a private industry. There's not a lot of public comps, and there's not a lot of people sharing their data. But from what we've gathered, 80% of all small contractors in the country are 1 to 4 trucks. Yeah. So that means a small family business. Most of our acquisition targets are smaller family businesses. You know, for example, fourth quarter last year, we bought two companies, one in Dayton, Atherton Plumbing. That is a third generation, relatively small, been around since 1958. And then one in Cleveland called The Plumbing Source that was started in 1985. And the guy who's running it for us now was their first employee. So I think there is a lot of, we typically promote from within, and it all depends on the person. But I would say in order to have your own company, you need a master's license. And you can typically apply for a master's license sometime after, 7 to 10 years of experience. But it's also very difficult, as you all know, running a small business. It goes from just the work of the work to answering the phone, doing your billing, finding insurance, blah, 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 all the headaches of it. And we typically find that most people don't want that headache when they can make just as much money working for us. It's all a commission-based pay structure because we typically do service work. We don't really do much new construction, which is the biggest challenge with Intel coming in is we know they can pay a little bit more than we can, which is why the culture piece is so important. You need to be as sticky as possible. You need to send every kid of every employee a birthday card with a gift card. You need to make sure that you're reaching out on anniversary dates. You need to make sure that you're having company events that aren't necessarily required, but something fun that people want to come to. You have to make them feel part of a family. Even though you are larger than a typical business, it has to feel like a family business, or else they're going to go somewhere else. Because, all our guys can leave tomorrow and be hired the day next, right? Well, and also, one thing that we do is, so we have a guy who was leaving to start his own. He got his master's license. We had a party for him. That's really cool, right? You grew an entrepreneur. It's terrible to leave him because that represents, probably $400,000 in revenue to us. But at the same time, that's somebody building a dream for their and their family. And how can you hold that against somebody? So, but at the same time, I think there's a lot of opportunity there. If you're the right kind of person who wants to go after it.
So you have to have the right disposition, the right mindset, and the desire for that for the long term.
It's hard. It's a lot of work, if you're running your own small business, you're working 80 hours a week at least, Whereas for us, it's commission-based pay. So if you're only working 35, you know, you got your jobs done. It's flat rate pricing, so you know what you're going to get paid on each job. A lot of people are happy with that.
I love it. Thank you. Cedric, a quick question for you. We chatted a little bit before you came up on the panel that you have a very discerning view on quality of life and what makes quality of life. And as people in the kind of great resetting and the great shift happening with talent moving around company to company, place to place, state to state, country to country, they're looking for a sense of a quality of life. They are looking for a view on how do they live, work, and play in new ways that gives them new experiences. So when you look at New York, where you're from, versus Columbus, Ohio, where we are now, very distinctly different. Some similarities, but different. How do you think about quality of life here? What matters to you that may be driving other talent here?
I did an internship with Cintas Corporation at their headquarters in Mason, Ohio. So I understand the references to Queen City, particularly juxtaposed to what can happen here in Columbus. And one of my mentors said to me, you know, getting the talent here is one thing, but retaining the talent is a totally different thing. He said, what do we do as an organization to retain talent such as Cedric? And so now I'm in a particular situation where I look at Columbus and New York in similar ways. And so I see that there is a lot of safe, sound living to be done here in Columbus, right? But what really tastes delicious to me as a consumer and a social entrepreneur is, where are the retail opportunities for whether it be fashion or clothing or education, technology? So I'm happy that Intel is coming here, but I just look at the robust amount of retail opportunities in all different verticals that are available in New York, and I say, where are all of those delicious types of opportunities here in Columbus? And so I look to create more of those types of experiences here in Columbus, but I also feel that it's those sorts of experiences that need to be created here in Columbus that can retain a New York level talent, a Chicago, an Atlanta, a Los Angeles level talent straight out of a university such as The Ohio State University. And so when I go out to entertain my family, I'm looking to do rich, robust things that are also affordable. You know, a lot of people rent homes and apartments in New York City, and people look at it like it's not as optimal because you're not necessarily a homeowner. And yet, the experiences that I can afford my family by taking a simple trip to Manhattan are unheard of in other areas around the country. And so I think that Columbus has to become the type of place where we have a diverse array of retail experiences. And when I say retail, I don't just mean clothing and food. I mean, you know, the museums that are available, right? I remember taking my children to a bubble exhibit. It was an hour and a half of a gentleman creating all different types of figures out of bubbles, you know? But my children loved it, and I look around Columbus for the bubble exhibit, and I don't find it, right? Particularly when it comes to foster care and adoption, I look at what are we doing differently than what other people are doing. In New York, they specialize in getting teenagers adopted. I look here, which is another experience that's offered in New York City. I look at Ohio and I say, what are we doing for the young teenagers who are soon to be homeless? Right. And so, you know, the 17-year-olds who will be cut off on their 18th birthday, what is Columbus doing for young people like that? And so it's just a variety of different opportunities that I'm thinking Columbus could step into. And I'm excited to see how they step up to that particular plate.
So there's a lot that can happen. Just because it hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that it won't.
That's correct.
An example is I live in a town called Westfield in New Jersey, and there's a startup company that piloted there called Wonder. And there are food trucks, but they bring national high-quality restaurant quality meals to your door, cook it outside your door. So it's a privilege to be able to use that service, but it's interesting how you have a lifestyle experience that's mobile and comes to you. So it's interesting to see, like, this blank slate that we have here in Columbus, Ohio, can they innovate in new ways that are different to what we have in New York that achieve the same kind of lifestyle? So we'll have to check back in here in 1 year from now at the next conference to see what's happened. So Melissa, a very special shout out to thank you for your day off for coming in to join the panel. I definitely appreciate that. So you mentioned something about the barriers to work, and for sure the workforce itself has been under a lot of stress, people falling out, some people coming back for all kinds of reasons. And considering that my perspective is that this is a bottom-up shift, what is that one barrier or one thing that people can change about themselves or their particular situation to re-engage with the workforce in a meaningful way?
I think they're all connected. I just want to put a caveat on top that knowing that so much of our employment opportunities now are really focused on bringing in diverse talent, understanding what diverse talent means and what comes with that. Here in Columbus, we have a very large new American population. They are excellent when it comes to building and impacting our community, when you think of it from an economic perspective and starting their own businesses and becoming homeowners. But what do employers do in understanding cultural competency to make these kind of hires? So for me, thinking about how you connect to communities, what does diverse talent mean? And also what accommodations that you're making to build loyalty and to create new opportunities that really not only tie in that single hire, but also bring a whole community with them. So I really challenge the community to think about new Americans as a great opportunity. And then the flip side, because I can't just give one, is thinking about how we lift up the child care system locally and nationally. Access to child care is so important to get families back into work, and both looking at that from an affordable perspective, but also the industry itself and the wages that are made. There's a reason that it's hard right now to get people into or children into child care. There's not enough teachers to do it because of what they're making and what that means too. So child care and cultural competency are my two.
Okay, I love that. And actually a big reason why we at Sway are huge fans of hybrid and flexible work, because it does give an opportunity for families to take care of their own children in that way. Right. So we're hopeful that makes a dent in that particular challenge. So Michael, I think that we were talking over last night, I think you drew great attention to remote and hybrid work means we're one world, working across time zones and countries. And one firm, there we go.
From Arthur Anderson.
That's right.
For global culture.
See?
It's
all in the DNA at the end of the day. In terms of like the truly working across cultures and time zones, it can be a barrier, the cultural sensitivities and differences. What would your one suggestion be to a person new to the style of work in terms of how they can develop cultural sensitivities?
For us, I would say culture, it's the most important topic in general to create a successful company, also worldwide. The question is how to establish culture, especially under the new expression future of work. We discussed this internally in our company for the last 3 years, and COVID gave us another flavor how this can be established and which are also the threats on that one. Let me start first with the US view. What happened in the US? Most of the people left the Chicago office. We have 150 people, has gone to nice places, Austin, Florida, especially the leaders took this opportunity to say, okay, we have not to work from the office, we can work abroad. We have now the opportunity to do that. And at the end, only a few came back. So we have now a complete diverse area where the people are living. We have to look for that to bring them back. On the other side, what we also decided is that the people which are working on teleworking, they can stay at home. This is our talent pool for the future time. Yeah, especially in the US, we are growing people by starting teleworking and from the call center perspective and growing in other jobs. Now, with the new future of work, yeah, this has a little bit stopped because they don't have the interconnectivity to the other ones in the US. Yeah, in the US, it's hard, and this will also stay. They will stay with a similar environment also for the future time. So we have to establish a complete different environment to bring people together, to connect them, and to do different things. Let me take first the Asian perspective before I'm coming to Europe. In Asia, people don't like to stay at home. The first request from their side was, when can we go back to the office? Mm-hmm. They like to work from the office. They don't like to be at home. If you do so, you will bring them to a complete different view of their life. They have very small houses. They are completely packed. They need also the interconnection to each other much more by direct access. And what we did is we brought all of them back, so remote work policy in Asia doesn't work. In Europe, we have different laws, a completely different labor law. Yeah, so the French, German, and Dutch, and also the law in Denmark are the much strongest ones, and the people has a right to work from the office. You cannot do everything and say, let's bring them out. And also people like to work from the office. Yeah, so this need also a different perspective, how you can do that. But the most important thing from our perspective was, how can we establish the right culture in the company if the people are not there? How can we establish that the people feel what the culture of the company is? And one of the decisions we took was to bring in the leading managers back to the office. In the US, as I said, it's a problem, but in Europe we did that, and the people see every day their manager if they like to do that. So as higher the position is, as more the people are working from the office, and giving the people the feeling this is their home and that they can work from there.
So you described a lot of like cultural models, but there are models that you've taught us, Denise, and you're going to do a workshop on this later today, of all the different hybrid, you know, strategies that you have and how to optimize all of that. But in 1999, we were doing the future of work at Arthur Andersen. We had teams in all continents, right? Just needed a computer, but we needed culture. We would bring them in for a team meeting, and then they go out. Even that team needed a culture. So it's just hybrid, right? You don't. It's sort of something in the middle, to, you know, depending on the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a whole new world out there, but one that I'm hopeful about. So Fabian, to end with you, you work in a large, complex organization. Which adopting new ways of working is just challenging because it's a large, complex, matrix organization. So just from your seat where you sit personally with your own teams, what you see around you, particularly in the Columbus versus New York as the two big hubs, what's your perspective on these new ways of working?
Yeah, so it's interesting. It is something, as a manager, it's a mind shift set because you're used to seeing your people all day long. My team, we're salespeople. We're a sales organization. Like, it's funny, pre-COVID, we would always joke and say, what do you do in the office? Why are you here? You're not going to find your next client under your desk. Like, you need to be out. You need to be out and about. Now we're saying, like, why aren't you in the office? We haven't seen you. So it's like you said, it's a balance of, like, respecting what they're doing, treating them like adults. But then also this, I'm a firm believer in that culture. And there was a saying that I believe is true, that people don't leave jobs or companies, they leave people. So creating that environment where they feel like they're included, but they have the flexibility. If you need to work from home, you need to take care of family members. I've always said family first, and then like work should be a close second, but it's always family first. So take care of yourself, your family, and then like do your job. As long as you're doing your job, we're good. So this is one of those environments where it depends on the job function. At a large firm, we're salespeople. We crave human interaction. We want to go see people. Like, we want to like get out there. We want to come to the office and see what's going on. There are other job functions at JP Morgan. And here in Columbus, like I said, we have over almost 17,000 employees. And those are all from entry-level jobs to senior managing directors that run lines of businesses globally for this bank. That are here in Columbus. So every line of business is a little bit different. So being able to flex and say maybe some organizations, some groups need to have some defined parameters. And there are groups that say, okay, it's 3 days in the office, 2 days out. And what are your 3 days on and what are your 2 days out? To, on my team, I'm like, go do your job. Like, I'm not going to look at it, I'm not going to monitor it, but you do have a scorecard. So we want to make sure that you're doing your job. So it is one of those things that as a firm, I don't think there's a large firm, a one like answer of here's what it is. It all depends on your job function, your line of business, your role, what you're doing. And I'll stop there because I know we're keeping you between us and lunch.
Can I add one thing real quick? I feel like a theme that hasn't been addressed when thinking about a hybrid work environment, both from the culture perspective and access, is device access. And I know that's something that in Central Ohio, there's many of us who've really looked at since COVID. And it's not just thinking about populations who haven't been able to afford internet and maybe technology in itself, but also thinking about the generations who really have only been exposed to mobile use, but then we're also expecting them to move into these high-tech experiences or just remote work and what that looks like. So I just wanted to throw that out there as a theme of opportunity, because it's something both from large corporations to nonprofits we've all really had to adapt and think about, but there's still great strides to take in that too.
So that's an awesome panel today. We've really only scratched the surface. You know, we have the same people doing the same kinds of jobs, moving towards the same goals. We're just giving new names to the work, the way that we're working into the future. So the perspectives are much valued, and I'm sure we'll get together again in a conference here next year to see workforce development, where it's gone since then. So thank you.
But don't move, because I want to have someone's on Zoom that is, we are connecting the talent and partners for investing and philanthropies. So one of our partners to help amplify this session here is a podcasting platform for all of our, this panel and our Chicago event. And as we go forward, there's just such really interesting people in our community, but we don't really get the word out. So I just wanted Slava and Anna just to speak to that.
I'm en route to Boston, so I stopped over at the Panera. You might hear some music. Apologize for that. So what I wanted to talk about today, so I am Anna Haskell, co-founder and CEO of Badverb. Badverb is a podcast interview platform. What we're building is a social graph, a social network of people, creators, thought leaders, all connected to each other through interviews. What we're doing with Mark, we're collaborating with the 361 Network to bring all the content that has been created in all of Mark's events. And that will be, that will be Monday briefings, that will be the conferences. We're bringing it to Padverb. The website is padverb.com. And what happens is we are labeling every piece of interview panel or any other format to a person who created it. So once you're in the network, and by the way, the Ohio tour is, we will send a link to all the participants with the Padverb link. So the Ohio tour will also be on Padverb. So what I wanted to do first is to kind of talk about briefly why we're doing that. We're doing that because right now, podcast interviews are very hard to find, and you have to know the name of the podcast in order to get to the creator. What we're building is essentially, if you want to participate in high-level interviews, you will be able to get to them. You will be able to earn your way through participating in events like Mark's or maybe doing your own podcast interviews. You will be able to a brand to promote your brand, your ideas, your company, whatever you're building through the audio format. So essentially, audio podcast interviews is another way of social networking. And we hope that our collaboration with Mark will allow you participants of the 361 firm network to amplify and to increase your own personal brand in the audio space. Here we have one of Mark's participants in the Chicago conference, Harry Lennox, the super connector. He is an actor, and he was one of the participants in Chicago. You can see that in addition to being interviewed by Mark, here Mark is a host. He also has other podcast interviews on Padverb. And here we actually created, just to give you a visual of what we're building, if Harry Lennox at some point wanted to talk to Matt Damon And we, for some reason, we always use Matt Damon for our examples. I guess somebody likes Matt Damon at Padverb. But anyway, so if Harry wanted to get to Matt Damon, he's only 1, 2, 3 steps away from him. He would have to do 3 interviews. And we can help him book those interviews because, they're all in our network. He can be a guest with Joe Stuber, then he can be a guest with Sam Jones, and finally he can interview Matt Damon. So this is just one of the things, one of the advantages that the 361 firm Padverb collaboration gives you. You will be in the network, in the audio network, and you can get to your, podcast goal through interviewing and getting through the steps. We can help you build that. The next steps are number one, if you're a 361, if you could just scroll down, I don't have screen sharing. If you are a 361 firm participant, you're already on Padverb, so you can claim your profile. It's easy to do. There's a link, and all of these slides are going to be shared through Mark's emails, and they're going to be on Mark's website as well. So you can claim your profile, you can edit it, and you can talk to me about booking your next interview if you want to get booked to more podcast interviews, and I will share my email address as well. And the other thing that you can do right now is you can, Padverb has just started our own original interview podcast. So if you feel like you would be a good guest on a podcast, on Padverb's podcast, then you can talk to me as well, or fill out a form on Padverb and become a guest.
Come join our 361 firm community of investors and thought leaders. We have a lot of events created by the community as we collaborate on investments and philanthropic interests. Join us.